Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, our national correspondent will take a look at the close U.S. presidential contest kicking off today in Iowa. Reaction to the swearing-in of Myanmar's newly elected parliament. Do our personal biases influence who we vote for?
We have a partisan brain, and the problem is the world out there isn't partisan. The world out there is just the world.
And superstar singer Taylor Swift has another big hit. Coming up right here on The Voice of America. After months of campaigning and debates, voters in the U.S. state of Iowa are about to have the first say in the 2016 race for president. Iowans will turn out today to vote in party caucus meetings and express their preferences for president. Tight races are expected for both major parties. The latest polls show a close Republican race between real estate mogul Donald Trump and Texas Senator Ted Cruz, and a tight Democratic contest between former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has a preview of the Iowa vote from Des Moines.
The top presidential contenders in both parties made a final appeal for votes Sunday on the eve of the Iowa caucus, the official launch of the 2016 campaign. Republican frontrunner Donald Trump projected confidence during a campaign stop in Council Bluffs.
You have a lousy record, 16 years, and you haven't picked a winner. Please pick a winner this time, okay? I'm going to win.
Trump supporters say they're ready to turn out.
I think there is a lot of anger among the establishment as well, and I think that's okay. I think the establishment should be shooken up because they have failed in the past.
Texas Senator Ted Cruz, slightly trailing Trump in the latest poll, also made an impassioned plea.
All across the state of Iowa, all across this country, people are waking up. And I'm here to tell you, help is on the way.
Florida Senator Marco Rubio is running third, but hopes to move up.
We won't just unite this party, we will grow it. We won't just unite the conservative movement, we will expand it. Because there is where the future of our country lies.
The Republican race will hinge on whether Trump supporters, with their disdain for the political class, will actually turn out, says Republican strategist Matt Strong.
And he's really tapped into something. Now the question is, can you count on people that have never participated in a very complex process to show up on February 1st?
Polls show a close race among Democrats Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Both of them made closing arguments Sunday. Clinton targeted some of the Republican contenders.
Loose talk, irresponsible talk, inflammatory rhetoric will make our job harder. So stick with me, stick with a plan, stick with the experience, stick with the ideas that will actually work for our country.
Sanders has been gaining on Clinton and is pushing for a big turnout.
We can make history. I urge you all to come out to caucus, and today I ask for your support.
The question is, can Sanders' followers match the organization of the Clinton campaign, says analyst Dennis Goldford.
And the Sanders people have tremendous enthusiasm. The question is, how good is their organization to get these especially young, enthusiastic supporters to show up for a caucus?
After weeks of frenzied campaigning in Iowa, the candidates are about to step aside and let the voters have their say. Jim Malone, VOA News, Des Moines.
Time now to check out trending stories online. For that, International Edition social media reporter G. Abby Lee is in the studio. Hi, G.
Hi, Susan.
What are we talking about today?
It's about Google, but also about making a quick buck or a quick $12,000. I'm not even joking when I say quick because it took a man named Sun Mei Vet holding on to the domain name for 1 minute to turn $12 into $12,000. The internet company lost ownership of its domain for 1 minute last October, and during that time, he bought the domain Google.com.
And Google tried to buy it back, of course.
You bet. The company tried to pay him a little over $6,000, but when he said the money will be given to charity, Google doubled the amount. Now, I know it's a bit hard to visualize it without seeing it written down, but Google spelled numerically is $6,006.13, hence the offer amount.
Not shabby at all. What's the public's reaction like to this story?
While the general sentiment is quite positive, many people are saying that's pretty cool of everyone involved. One person wrote, "Nice to see someone can still be good-natured about a mistake." And good for Google for doubling the charity donation. Another person wrote, "Classy all around." But some people took it a bit more seriously than others. One reader on the ABC News article wrote, "This story is ridiculous on 10 levels. For starters, how could anyone at Google be stupid enough to allow their registration to lapse? Second, given the value of the domain name, a $6,000 would be a pathetically low offer. I don't believe this story at all." That reply generated many other replies. One of them reads like this. "Well, he essentially rented it for 1 minute. $6,000 for a minute of the Google name sounds legit." Susan, I'm not an expert, but I think many people will agree investing $12 to rake in more than $12,000 is not a bad investment.
Indeed, a lot better than the current stock market. Thanks for being here today. You can follow G on Twitter at G Abby Lee. And our program's account is at VOA underline IE. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A newly published study suggests that due to human activity, Earth is entering an age of plastic, as our planet's waters and land will be buried in layers of plastic waste by mid-century. The study's lead author, Jan Zalaschwitz, says that discarded plastic can be found everywhere, from the tops of mountains to deep beneath the oceans. Despite its increased use, plastics don't degrade as easily as natural materials like paper and wood. According to the World Watch Institute, nearly 300 million tons of plastic are made every year. It was reported that in the U.S. alone, only 7% of all plastics generated in 2009 was recycled, with the remainder deposited in landfills and elsewhere. The study suggests that plastic will have a long-lasting impact on Earth's geology as it becomes a part of the soil and eventually a unique part of its strata. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Myanmar's newly elected parliament, dominated by the National League for Democracy, was sworn into office today, embarking on a historic new path for the Southeast Asian nation dominated by military dictatorship for more than half a century. Although barred by the Constitution from seeking the presidency herself, Aung San Suu Kyi said she will be above the president with enormous influence in the direction of policy. Former Australian ambassador to Myanmar, Trevor Wilson, told VOA's Victor Beattie, in the wake of the NLD's smashing electoral victory in 1990 that was annulled by the military, there is a historic moment for the once isolated country.
This is a tremendously important time in Myanmar because it is the first time that popular opinion has triumphed in the political scene, and the representatives of the most popular party will be the ones deciding who are going to be in the executive positions and who will be in the government, essentially. This has never really happened like this before in Myanmar.
Now, they're still going to have to share power with the military, right?
They will share power because the constitution under which all of this is happening reserves 25% of the seats in all the elected assemblies for representatives of the military.
However, the NLD will hold sway. Expectations must be very high among the people.
Expectations are very high, probably too high. I'm not sure that everybody's realistic about how difficult and complicated it's going to be to run the country, to even just for the politicians and the parliament to sort out what they're going to do, how they're going to do it, when they're going to do it. Expectations seem to be that the new National League for Democracy government can resolve all of these issues very quickly. Well, I don't think they're going to be able to resolve them quickly. It's going to take some time.
Now, this parliament is going to elect its leaders. Where does Aung San Suu Kyi fit in all this?
Well, she's the head of the party that won the election. She is a member of the parliament, heading that party that is going to be forming the government. She cannot be a candidate for president. So somebody else will have to be president, somebody presumably chosen and supported by Aung San Suu Kyi's party. And they've got quite a lot of experienced people amongst their members. not necessarily people that are well-known either inside or outside the country, because they've had a pretty up-and-down existence, you know, being in jail for many years and not being able to speak publicly and openly for many years as well. But there are people there, and they will, without a doubt, choose one of their people to be the president. And that person would then have to work closely with Aung San Suu Kyi.
Well, she's indicated she's going to be above the president. What does that mean?
Who knows? I don't think that was necessarily a very wise thing to say. But what it means is that, in crude terms, is that she is the leader of the party that is forming the government. So as the leader of that party, of course, she has very definite power and authority. But she also has to recognize that she won't be the president.
Trevor Wilson says the parliament's top priority will be the country's social and economic development. Coming up on International Edition, using our brain to avoid being conned by politicians. And another hit song for someone who just doesn't seem to need one. We recently took a look at politicians wooing supporters with their smooth-talking ways. Author Rick Schenkman has written a book about it called Political Animals: How Our Stone Age Brain Gets in the Way of Smart Politics. Today we continue our conversation. Welcome, Rick. Do our personal biases get in the way of clear thinking? Because we all have them.
We sure do. We have a partisan brain, as a neuroscientist, Drew Weston, has argued. What this means is that when we confront information politically, it comes into our brain, and what do? If it is something that confirms an existing belief, we immediately accept it, and it goes into a certain compartment of our brain, and we integrate it in with all of our other knowledge. If it is upsetting information, it's contrary to our belief, then what we do is we shunt it aside, we ignore it. And when Drew Weston put subjects in an experiment, in an MRI, he conducted an experiment where he took the Bush voters of 2004 and he gave them information that was positive to them. You could see on the MRI that neurons were activating in one part of the brain. And when he gave these Bush voters information that was contrary to Bush, that made him out to be a hypocrite, that activated a different set of neurons. And basically, what those neurons were doing was saying, this is information that I don't want to really have to deal with, so I'm going to shun it over here and ignore it. And this isn't just for Bush voters. They also did the same experiment with Kerry voters, John Kerry voters, back in 2004, and the exact same thing happened. So we have a partisan brain, and the problem is, the world out there isn't partisan. The world out there is just the world. And if you wind up interpreting the world through your partisan lens, well, you're not going to really understand what is happening in the real world. So we have to guard against these biases. And you know what? It's very, very difficult. But as long as you're aware of how your own brain is working, and it's doing all this automatically, you're not thinking about it. This is how the brain works. Then you have this conclusion that, well, I guess I have to second guess myself. And you know what? We're not used to second guessing ourselves. With our instincts, we go on instinct. We feel good when we do. So what I'm recommending is that we do something that doesn't come naturally to us.
Should the way politicians conduct their business be changed, or is that an impossibility?
Well, that's an impossibility as long as you're going to have a mass democracy. They're going to stand up and they're going to try to get us going by saying things that are going to activate our evolved psychological mechanisms. That's the way that the social scientists refer to the way our brain takes in information and processes it, like back in the Stone Age period. So when Donald Trump is running around and he's talking about immigrants, Mexican immigrants coming across the border, rapists and murderers, and then he talks about Muslim terrorists blowing up things, what he is doing is activating an evolved psychological mechanism. And that evolved psychological mechanism, in this particular case, happens to have several different elements to it. One, it's fear of the outsider. But two, it's something a little bit more than that. It's something that's called the fire alarm bias. So what's the fire alarm bias? Fire alarm bias is when you hear a fire alarm, your nervous system immediately reacts. Your eyes widen, your nostrils flare, your hearing becomes acute, your heart starts to race a little bit, and you're on edge. And the reason is that's an evolved strategy for saving your life. What that means is that a politician like Trump can come along and he can push that button and you have an automatic reaction to it and you can't help yourself. You are going to feel something. But always, here's the optimistic message, always higher order cognitive thinking is allowable. So you can have your instinctive reaction, you can let it wash over you, and then you can sit back and say, wait a minute, that's not really in the context of things. That's not really the right reaction to have.
And the name of your book again?
Name of the book is Political Animals, How Our Stone Age Brain Gets in the Way of Smart Politics.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Neil Arcega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
You're not going to believe this one, but Taylor Swift, you know that singer, good-looking, good dancer, very wealthy, tremendously successful. Well, she's going to be boring. She's got another hit. And my colleague Larry London of Border Crossings has joined us here in the studio to give us this news. You know, she's like a broken record, you might say.
Yeah, in many
hit
ways.
Hit after hit after hit, Larry.
That's right. In many ways. And this is the album that defied her record company's recommendation. The 1989 album was recorded against their best wishes. They said it's not a good idea to go from country to pop and abandon your country fans. It probably won't work. But Taylor Swift said, I think it will. And she was right. So now she has her sixth hit from the 1989 album, which is her fifth album and her first to be an all-pop album.
You know those horror movies where somebody makes a pact with the devil to get something and then it turns around and bites them in the It's just incredible how her career has been so tremendous.
Well, when you talk about incredible accomplishments, Taylor Swift is the second most charting artist on the Hot 100 pop chart, just behind Aretha Franklin.
Wow.
Taylor Swift has had 61 songs make it to the pop charts in her career.
And she's still young.
And she's very young, and Aretha has had 73. And Taylor's, as I say, still going strong, only five albums. And she just finished her world tour, which, you know, these tours for Taylor last at least a year, sometimes 2 years. So she works very hard for the money, to quote the lyrics of a famous song. And she's done very, very well. They love her around the world. The song, Out of the Woods, is the new song. A lot of people believe, well, the lyrics might have been inspired by her short relationship with Harry Styles from the group One Direction, although she's not willing to confirm that.
Well, let's hear a little bit of the song.
Okay, sounds good to me.
Bird.
So, Larry, you were talking about her career and how she's on the road a lot. Is this going to be one of those cases where she might regret missing some of her youth by working so hard all the time?
Not at all. Taylor is to coin a phrase, a workaholic. She works very hard. She feeds on work. You know, you got to keep in mind, Susan, the fact that Taylor grew up as an outcast. She was the kid at school no one wanted to play with. No one wanted her on their team. No one liked her. And the family even had to move to another state to get out of that rut that they were in, that she was in. And look at her now. Everybody wants a piece of Taylor Swift. She's loving it. This is quite a refreshing change from the way she grew up.
I guess those kids are pretty sorry they behave that way now.
I'll bet you they are. Look at me now, Taylor Swift.
Okay, thank you, Larry, for coming by. I always appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Susan.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us today for International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. government, through the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, transferred the recently completed construction of the National Health Laboratory in Kampala to the Ministry of Health in mid-January. U.S. Mission Uganda's Chargé d'Affaires Trish Mahoney and Minister of State Chris Baryomunsi presided over the handover ceremony. The National Health Laboratory project began in 2012 when the Ministry of Health requested the assistance of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, to support the construction of a laboratory to address critical gaps in Uganda's health service delivery system. Funding for the National Health Laboratory construction came from CDC and the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR. Construction began in 2013, and the more than $8 million facility is now completed and has been transferred to the Ministry of Health. The National Health Laboratory will play a key role in strengthening Uganda's health systems by providing a valuable resource for the detection, control, and ongoing surveillance of the diseases which affect the health of all Ugandans and influence Uganda's sustainable development. While the priority of this new facility will be HIV diagnosis, prevention of mother-to-child transmission of HIV, and viral load monitoring capacity, those suffering from many other health conditions will also benefit from this lab. The ministry's sickle cell and hepatitis B virus screening and the World Health Organization-supported meningitis, cholera, and typhoid screening program will make use of this facility. The National Health Laboratory could also be used for confirming bacterial disease outbreaks and for diagnosing malaria. This building represents our partnership with the people of Uganda and our commitment to helping Uganda build its future, said Chargé d'Affaires Trish Mahoney. We will continue to work with the government of Uganda and the Ministry of Health in the coming years to strengthen Uganda's health infrastructure and ensure it becomes strong, efficient, and self-sustaining.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.